are back.
You're listening to You Would Think, the Philadelphia Flyers podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Collington, and joining me again, everyone's favorite, Mr. Mike Giletto Sr. How you doing?
Hello, hello. Welcome.
Hey, welcome back. You took last week off when we spoke to Kevin, and I assume you listened to that show. What did you think?
I did. It was very good. He had a lot of background, or a lot of
knowledge.
Insight.
Absolutely.
A lot of insight. Behind the scenes, that's the word kind of I'm looking for. Put out some stuff that it's good for the casual, not casual, but the serious.
Yes.
Not in the background, behind the scenes stuff that we don't see every day. It was good to hear some of that.
Yeah, definitely. And Kevin was a great guest, and he will be on again at some point, and we'll probably have you on with him at some point, and we'll do roundtable type things, and we're kind of expanding our host base. Dom couldn't make it today, but he was invited to join the show. You know, but we got Mike Sr. back. We're back for another week of Flyers talk. And before we get into this week, pretty decent week for the Flyers, you can find the show on Twitter at YWT Podcast. You can find Mike at Mike_Giletto, by the way. You can also find the show on Facebook, Instagram, Podbean, iTunes, Google Podcasts, SportsTalkPhilly.com, pretty much everywhere. If you follow our Twitter, we tweet out all the information. Mike does a great job running that. And without further ado, Flyers went 3-0 this week.
Terrific week.
It's pretty, you can't really ask for much better.
We talked. And going into it, it wasn't without its, at least on my end, it wasn't without its concerns, because there have been some, again, small sample size to begin the week. But when you looked at it going in, they did have, you know, there's eight, before last night, there were eight games played. And that's a tenth of the season. So it's not as small, that's 10% of the season. So it's not as small a sample size as it was after two games, three games.
So I wonder if our fans have picked up a drinking game where every time we say small sample size, they take a shot.
Well, that game is now over because there's no more small sample. All right. It's 10% of the schedule, so you can draw some real conclusions.
Please play responsibly. Please don't play while driving.
the good, the bad, and the ugly. The ugly is Konechny and Lindblom. They're on pace for, you know, 70-point season and 100-and-something point season.
Yeah,
that's terrific.
I don't understand the ugly.
The ugly is Van Riemsdyk with on pace for a 20-point season. Hayes okay. On pace for a 30-point season. Voracek on pace for a 40-point season. And Drew on pace for a 50-point season. Not going to win a lot of hockey games, and that's the majority of the reason why they're 4-3-1 going into last night, as opposed to being better than that.
Okay? I get what you're saying.
Eight games, that's a concern. Those point totals are a concern.
For sure. But we also saw in last night's game, and we'll talk about the Columbus game a little later on, James Van Riemsdyk and Jake Voracek both had three-point nights. Kevin Hayes had multiple points. So maybe, I understand what you're saying, maybe it's a slow start. Maybe they're coming. Maybe they're figuring out the system. Maybe they're working to play together, because that line looked great last night. And maybe it's coming around, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But I do actually want to start with, you mentioned the good, and that Vegas game was pretty good.
Absolutely. Flyers, they played terrific.
Yep, they got up early. They held it. Konechny scored from Lindblom and Ghost. You know, you can't ask for much better than that. Hayes scored, Provorov, Lindblom scored again. You know, Michael Raffel had the best game in the last 5 years. Michael Raffel was phenomenal in that game. In the building, we thought he had two goals. One later got taken away from him because he said he didn't touch it. But it,
you know,
it was a phenomenal
game. They played terrific. Yeah, they played terrific. The whole season, they played really, really well.
Yeah.
There's certain themes you can draw after eight games. One of the themes that is a really, really positive sign is, except for one game, they've been the territorial leader in every single game. They've carried the play predominantly over the other team in every single game except for the Calgary game.
Yep, and that's
Calgary games, and I'm including the Edmonton game.
Yes, yeah.
And they lost 6-3-ish, something
yes,
like that?
It was 6-3, yes. And it was 6-1 for a long time.
Even at 6-1, they were still out playing Edmonton. As crazy as that sounds, they're territorially, they were out playing Edmonton.
And then
kept more shots, more hits, more offensive zone time.
The problem with that game is Connor McDavid decided he didn't want to lose that one. That's all it was.
It was the third goal. It's a mismatch. Player, he's never going to catch him. Nope. That's it. Kevin hit that right on point.
The best player in the world decided he was putting his foot down, and they weren't losing that game. And he just absolutely decimated the Flyers just all by himself. 5 points. Yep. You can't really argue with that.
If what is happening with him is what looks like could be happening with him, it's a scary thing for the concerning thing for the rest of the West and the NHL.
Yeah, I'm supremely glad he's in the other conference. We only got to see him twice a year. If we see him in the playoffs, it won't be till the final. I'm supremely glad that Connor McDavid plays out West.
Yeah, but you don't know for how long.
Well, you know, that's the question.
Hopefully, very, very long, but you just don't know.
Well, if they have to threaten to sell the team, then that means they have to trade him to L.A. for a bunch of cash, right? Because that's right. What Edmonton does with their superstars.
Correct.
Anyway. No,
he's just so young that it's a scary proposition that when he gets to that free agent age, he's still, you know, it's going to be like Bryce Harper. You know, he's so young,
right?
You know,
well, it's not even Bryce Harper. It's max money. It's LeBron James hitting free agency.
Or Trout. Yeah, absolutely.
He's going to have 31 teams calling him, going, here is 7 years at the most we can offer you. Will you please come play here?
Right.
It's incredible. And I hope if
what we're seeing is where we think it potentially could be going,
at this point, knock on wood, it's going to take an injury. He's just like, and I'm not wishing that upon him, obviously, but unless he gets some serious, you know, degenerative knee disorder, whatever it is. And again, absolutely not wishing it upon him, right, because I think he's great for the game. But unless something like that happens, he's going to be the best player in the world for a very long time. And like the second Sidney Crosby retires, the debate ends. It's McDavid.
Oh, agreed.
A new challenger steps up. And I don't know where that kid comes from.
What's concerning or alarming to the rest of the NHL is just this: the guy seems to have or be getting the want to.
Yes.
And when you combine talent with want to, scary things happen. No. As you can see, when Crosby, when he went to that, I want to.
Right.
It's a different player. It's just a different player and so much harder to beat.
It's hard as a Flyers fan to give Sidney Crosby too much credit, but you have to, and I understand that. But he really is the best player I've ever seen at improving his game, because it seems like every summer he takes one aspect of the game and says, all right, this summer I'm going to master a backhand pass. This summer I'm going to master face-off wins. This summer I'm going to master tipping the puck. And then the next season he comes back and he's the best in the league at that.
I hate to say it, but the guy's gotten so much better.
It reminds me of the year Wilt Chamberlain decided he wanted to average 50 rebounds a game.
Right.
So he just decided that season that he was going to average 50 rebounds a game, and guess what he did? He averaged 50 rebounds a game.
Right.
And it's unreal how he's so much better, and I'm talking back to Crosby now, he's so much better than 90% of the league that he can just decide what he's dominating.
Yeah, if that Pittsburgh team he's with now manages somehow to have a good season, and if they sneak into the playoffs, I'm not counting that. I'm talking about, like a top three seed.
Right.
They're really not very good.
No, they're not. They're absolutely not. And
he has to be MVP or plus level to get that team fighting for a division win.
Especially with Geno out, especially with Matt Murray not looking great so far in the early season. Right. It really is going to take a superb effort from him.
And if Letang does his normal Letang routine and is, plays 40 games,
right,
and they still do it,
he's the Hart Trophy.
I'm not talking just making the playoffs. I'm talking about if they have one of those upper echelon seasons where they're a division winner without, with Letang playing 40 and Murray struggling, clearly he played at an MVP plus level.
Absolutely. And, again, he always has the capability of doing that. But
how old is he now?
32-ish.
Why can't he be 37?
I wish he was 47 and calling Jaromir Jagr for a job next summer. But
you know how much it disgusts me to say I respect his game?
Yep. And he's probably still going to be top tier for the next 3 or 4 years minimum.
Yeah, because for the first 3 or 4 years of his career, we were 100% able to completely loathe him because he was such a baby.
Yep.
And that all went away. I hate his guts, but I can't say he's a baby.
Yep. I mean, there's a little bit of complaining, but I don't know if it's more than any other NHL player.
Right, right. No, look, if something happens that you don't like, you're gonna say something to the official.
I think it's
but it was 10 times a game before.
I think it's transitioned a little bit into or from whining, crying, whatever you want to call it, to, hey, I'm the best player in the world. You're going to give me that call, right? And there's a little bit of not complaining, but kind of leaning on the refs I think, kind of the implication. But at the same time...
I hear what you're saying. It's to sway the ref. It's not to cry.
Right. I think McDavid does that. I think McKinnon does that. I think all the top-tier players do.
Every great player does. Right. Every great player is... If you're not trying to work the official, you're not trying to win. I get that.
If you're not cheating, you're not trying.
But after I say this, I want to get off this Crosby's great.
Yeah, same
crap.
We've been
even his complaining at this point, 90% of the time, it doesn't even concern him. It concerns a teammate, a call.
Right.
It's not. Hey, he touched my ankle. That should be a call.
Right.
It's that was offsides, or that was a violation of the faceoff, or that wasn't a penalty on my teammate, or it's something broader than him.
Right.
That's how much he's progressed.
It's a little more team centric rather than individual centric.
Correct.
That's valid. I'll give you that. But I do agree. We've been complimenting Sidney Crosby for far too long, especially because the Flyers do play the Penguins on Tuesday. Before we get into the Chicago game, we're going to talk about the upcoming schedule. They played Columbus last night, and that was the first of four straight division games. We're recording this in our usual Sunday morning recording time. The show will be out probably between the first and second period of tonight's game against the Islanders. So it's Columbus, the Islanders, that Pittsburgh team, and then Friday night the Flyers play New Jersey. All on the road, except for Columbus last night. That's four big divisional games.
It's certainly a measuring stick.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, you know, the Metro standings right now still look pretty, you know, it's early season. Everybody has a very similar number of points. We haven't really started to, you know, the cream rise to the top yet. Except for the Rangers in New Jersey, but the top six teams are only separated by 8 points. Washington's played 13 games and has 19 points. Flyers have played nine games and have 11 points. So it's still early in the season, and game numbers are different enough that the divisional standings are kind of meaningless. But right. But after these four games, you know, the Flyers have already won one of which. You'll kind of have a better standing of where we sit. You know, if we beat the Islanders, who are currently sitting in a playoff spot, but I know it's early. Pittsburgh is, you know, in kind of a wild cardy bubbly area. And then New Jersey's at the bottom of the division. So if you can beat those two teams in front of you on Sunday night and Tuesday night, you really start to emerge as a real contender in the division.
Absolutely. If you have one, if you go 1-2 the rest of the week, it was a... Okay, they went 2-2, and you're treading water. You don't want to tread water. You want to put some separation and put some points on the board and bank some points for the future.
Yeah, and we talked, Kevin and I talked about it a lot on last week's show, which, if you missed, is still available for download. I personally thought it was a great episode. But we talked about early in the season, a team like the Colorado Avalanche starting 7-0-1. And they're in just such a phenomenal position to make the playoffs, because at this point, if they play 500 hockey the rest of the day or the rest of the season, they're still 7 games over 500. And that's enough to put you in the conversation. So,
it's not football. Going 7-0 and, you know, is as good as that, but it helps.
Right.
And it's still a huge, huge jumping point. And you figure if you have the ability to open up 7-0-1, you certainly should be able to play 500 better the rest of the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's a great jumping point. It's getting out of the block ahead of everybody else in the race.
And the Flyers have very often gone the other way, started 2-8 or 1-6 or
right, and then scrambling the rest of the season.
And then you're playing from behind, and then you can't play 500 hockey. You have to play 700 hockey, 750 hockey, just right. to get back to where you were. Because like you said, we're 8 or 9 games in. It's not a huge sample size, but we're over 10% of the season. Right. If you copy-paste what we've done so far times 10, that's where we're at.
50 and 30 works.
50 and 30 absolutely works. 47 and, you know... That's kind of the bubble. I'd like to be better than that. I'd like to be securely in the playoffs, but you're right. 50 and 30 works.
Yeah, 100 points is 100 points.
Yep, and most of the time, that's good enough to get you in the playoffs.
Right.
But
it used to be all the time, but now with the overtime, well, we don't need to go there again.
I know. You and I have very similar feelings about that. 10-minute three-on-three.
Yeah, I would love it.
Right. It would be ideal.
Yep. And do away. Well, and we talk and do away with the overtime loss point. Other than that, the NHL is wonderful.
Well, I actually heard an interesting theory. I'm going to give the Steve Dangle podcast a little credit here. I was listening to their most recent episode, and they proposed a 10-minute three-on-three, and at the end of that, you tie, but if you tie, neither team gets points in the standings. So if you win in overtime, you still get 2 points. If you lose in overtime, you still get 1 point. But if that overtime runs out without anybody scoring, neither team gets a single point.
So it's like you lost.
It's like you lost. Both teams lost in regulation. No points.
I don't hate that because you're adjusting for the point you get for the overtime loss.
It incentivizes action in the overtime.
Exactly. And that's 99% of what it does. Exactly. Right. It forces you to put the pedal to the metal to win the game.
Yep.
You get more if you give up a goal.
Exactly.
Than if and it would stop all that lollygagging around and going backwards with the puck a la soccer.
You might see teams pulling their goalie with a minute left in overtime once they have the puck just to try to get a scoring opportunity. And worst case scenario, you give up an empty net goal. All right, you still get a point.
Right. Although, you're inviting the fans that need to take a calculus class to figure it all out.
Well, I mean, we're going there anyway. Let's be honest. Analytics are a real thing in the NHL, and they're far too complex for me to understand. The people that know how to do them, great. I respect them. But they tell me, hey, blah, blah, blah is good. And I say, all right, I believe you. I don't.
It may have something to do with being able to evaluate a player's worth to a team.
Right.
I have my doubts on that as well. But as far as playing the game, it has zero credibility to me.
Right. No, I agree. As far as I'm concerned, analytics are all about large sample sizes. And one single game is not a large sample size on any metric. So one game, analytics don't matter. But I agree that it's about evaluating long-term trends and how a player actively helps his team away from the puck, with the puck, et cetera.
Right, yeah. No, if it's about player evaluation, I totally see the merit to it.
Right.
As far as wanting to use it, I don't know what the formulas are, so whether... or how accurate the formulas are, so I'll hold off on the full value. But to suggest that it should affect the style of play, this winger has a tendency to go right, so you're gonna jump the wall on him. All he's gonna do is cut left. I mean, there's baseball's totally different, where player.
Well, I was about to ask you about baseball, because baseball is the other analytics sport, really, as far as things go. Every sport has them, but baseball is probably the sport where it's the most prevalent.
It's overused in that as well.
You see things like the shift and bringing in a reliever.
But it's still valuable. Yeah, exactly. It has a place in the game, not only for evaluation of the player, but for playing the game. I don't see it in hockey where it has a whole lot of evaluation for how you play the game. I just don't see that. Again, if you take going right away from a player, he's just going to go left. I mean, it's hockey. It's not where a guy drives to make a layup in basketball and he's 90% of the time going to go right. You cut off the right.
Well,
harder for him to go left.
Right.
That's not true in hockey.
The stat that I think, or the stats that I think are a little more substantial, are about generating scoring chances. Not so much about specifically where a guy skates, but how much offense he creates or how much offense he diminishes from the other side. How much offense he suppresses from the other team.
If you're going to tell me a guy's shooting percentage increases when he's in the slot as opposed to on the circle, well, you're not telling me anything.
Okay, but if he's...
The entire world is better from the slot than from the circle.
If he's better at generating space and feeding someone in the slot, that has value, correct?
And how you play the game, I don't see it. I mean, you're going to defend your zone the way you defend your zone.
Well, let me use an example. Kevin Hayes. So far this season, or so far coming into the season, he was... a lot of people said he was overpaid. He was a 50-point guy. He had never really earned... he had never played to the level of a $7 million a year contract.
All true.
All true.
We'll go into what you want to say, but all true.
Right.
But that's the only reason you got him here. Go ahead.
But so far, from what I've seen, and again, I'm not going to say small sample size, but a moderately small sample size, 8 games, 9 games in a Flyers uniform, he looks strong in the puck. He creates space. He's a good passer. We saw last night he's a good penalty killer. He had that beautiful shorthanded goal that we'll talk about once we get into the Columbus game. So far, I haven't seen a 50-point guy. I've seen a guy who is so good defensively that it generates his offense. And that now that he's playing with better teammates than he had in Winnipeg last year and New York before that, I think, and I said this before the season, I think Kevin Hayes is going to set a career high in points. I'm not saying he's a 90-point guy, but I think he's probably between 60 and 70. And
my perception of him over the 9 games so far is they've gotten a player who does everything well. That's the upside. He does everything
Jack of all trades.
The downside, he doesn't appear to do anything great.
And master of none.
That's which is not necessary. You can win a lot of hockey games doing everything well and nothing great. That's not a knock on him. I'm just saying
I
he doesn't have a blistering shot. He's not, you know,
he's not incredibly fast. Right.
But he is. But he does everything well. He passes well. He shoots well. He plays hard. He plays strong. He's good on the puck.
He plays
passes
good
well.
IQ
he kills
hockey.
Penalties. Exactly. He's a very very good hockey player and does everything well. Okay.
Right.
And so that's the positive.
Yep. And I
you know who he reminds me of? Next game you watch.
Okay.
Think of this number on the back of his jersey and tell me if you don't see some similarities. Put 55 on the back of his jersey.
I'm trying to figure out who you're talking about.
Unless he wore 25 for a small pair, but I think he wore 55 here. Primo.
Okay. Yeah, I believe he was 25.
He reminds me in stature, in size, and how he plays, and he's still fast for his size. Not fast, but fast for his size. He's tall like him. He just reminds me a lot of Primo.
Your son's going to be disappointed in you because apparently Keith Primo was his favorite player growing up. And how do you not know that Primo wore 25?
He must have wore 55. Then he wore 55 in Detroit.
Your son's going to be very disappointed.
He wore 55 at some point.
Right. But
maybe even here until 25 was open.
Right. I know he's Mike's favorite player, and that's why there's a 25 in like his email and blah, blah, blah. And I think he's going to be pretty disappointed with you. But
you know what? I wouldn't be shocked if the overtime goal and the fifth overtime, I wouldn't be surprised if there was a 55 on his back.
There might have been a 25, and you were so tired because it was 3 a.m. that you saw a 5.
That's possible. For some reason in my head, again, it could have been with Detroit. I have 55 in my head, but I understand that it might have been 25. I even mentioned that.
And you know what? I like asking, no offense, older fans. You stayed
no
up for that
taken.
Game, right?
I did.
Okay, because I was like 9 years old. I didn't stay up for it. But people who were adults, people who could theoretically stay up till 3 a.m. to watch a playoff game.
I did.
You were up for that?
Yep.
How was work?
It's no BS, by the way. Like, seriously.
How was work the next morning?
It was okay. I had a job at the time, and I probably still do. I had a job that if I got to work a couple hours late, it wasn't the end of the world.
Must be nice.
I made the guy enough money that he was, you know. If it was the first day of spring was beautiful, or the first beautiful day of spring, I went to go play golf. He had no problem with it. So it was one of those type of jobs.
Yeah.
So I may have gone in at 11 or something like that.
Well, it's funny because I've talked to my father, friend of the show, Charles Collington, who was on episode 21, I believe.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah.
I can't believe you can count to 21.
I'm sorry?
I'm surprised you can count to 21.
Yeah, okay.
we weren't going to go a whole show without me taking at least one shot.
No, I knew it was coming. Just a matter of when. But I talked to him about it, and he obviously stayed up also. He stayed up till about 2 a.m., and he works the same place your son works and had to be in work at 7:15 the next day. And
he had to do what he had to do. A little less exciting. Yeah.
It's a little less exciting when you get 3 or 4 hours of sleep and you roll into work. And
sure.
You look at the other Flyers fan and go, yep.
You know what? Ask him this question next time you see him or next time you talk to him.
He listens to the show, so you can just ask him now and I'll tell you what he says.
Okay. As bad as it was the following morning and however tired you may have been and however long that day was.
I know for a fact he'd do it in a heartbeat. I already asked him that.
How bad would it have been
if they'd lost?
If Primo didn't score and Pittsburgh did.
Well, I'm convinced that if Primo didn't score, they'd still be playing. Primo, you know, 80, 85 years old, still skating around out there.
Yeah. But. I think if Pittsburgh scores, you're talking sick day.
I think you're probably right. But so we talked about that Vegas game. The Flyers just looked like the better team. Some of that was the fact that Vegas played a back-to-back and really left Oscar Dansk out to dry. We didn't get Marc-Andre Fleury. I believe he played the next night against a division or a Western Conference team. I think they played Chicago the next night. So it makes sense that Vegas would put their backup in against the Eastern team and try to beat a Western team where it's more likely to affect their playoff race. But regardless, Vegas really did leave Oscar Dansk out to dry in that game. And I feel a little bad for him.
I'm not going to feel sympathy for the other goalie only because if that's who they chose to play, he's an NHL goalie. He's there for a reason.
He's kind of an NHL goalie. Their NHL backup is hurt, so he's kind of an AHL goalie.
We've been beaten by plenty of AHL goalies.
That's fair.
And if we won 3-2 on a shot from the blue line that he saw all the way and just missed, okay. But we beat Vegas.
Yeah,
we beat Vegas up.
And his defense really left him out to dry. The Vegas defense did not look good in that game.
But I think it was because the Flyers played well. It's hard for defense to look good when you're on them.
You
make them make mistakes.
You mentioned that the Flyers have been pretty dominant, and I agree with you. And this game was definitely that.
One of their most dominant, yes. Correct. Yeah,
Vegas,
absolutely.
Vegas never really looked into it. Even the first period, the Flyers were up 1-0. Outplayed Vegas, but it was fairly close. And then the second period, the Flyers stepped on the gas and blew their doors off.
There's a few themes, and we'll go into them, assuming I can remember them. A few themes where over the first nine games, it's first period. Normally, at best, they've been okay.
Yeah,
they've been really, really good in the second and terrific in the third. It's almost like it's almost like they're going downhill.
I think
once they have a hard time getting the ball rolling, or not a hard time, but they don't pedal to the metal from the beginning. But once they get that ball rolling downhill, man, they go.
And I
think that's a great sign.
And I've mentioned it before. I think they're using the first period as evaluation. They come in with a pretty neutral game plan, kind of see what their opponent's doing. And then they make adjustments between the first and the second. And I've seen that numerous times so far this season, where they come out in the second and they're attacking weaknesses in a way that they weren't in the first. And they come out in the second and they know their opponent's game plan and they're now counterattacking in a way that so far has proved fairly successful in most of their games.
Correct. And I think the first period, especially the first 10 minutes, I think their mission clearly in the first 10 minutes and first period is don't give up goals.
Right.
I'm not saying they haven't given up any, but the plan is
play well defensively.
If we score, great. If an opportunity presents itself where something is there,
you're going to go. Yeah.
But don't take any risks. Don't give up any goals, and let's get into the game and ensure that we're in the game as the game progresses, because we've worked harder. We know we're going to get there, and we're going to play better as the game goes on. Now, whether that works over 80 games, we'll see. It's worked over 9.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe teams start looking at that and changing things up and, counterattack back. It's rock, paper, scissors, right? Once the Flyers start moving, you'll start moving counter to them. And it's all about the chess match.
And I also think of what we talked a lot about early in the first couple games, the depth of the team. I think it's got as much to do with that as a plan.
Absolutely.
To do it.
You mentioned Oscar Lindblom and Travis Konecny, who are absolutely lighting the world on fire. I mentioned the fact that Michael Raffel had his best game in a very long time against Vegas.
Right, Raffel, Lawton's got 3 or 4 points in 8 games. Yep. Yeah, if you get 50 points out of Lawton, that's a hugely productive fourth line player.
I'm gonna tell you this right now. If you get 50 points out of Scott Lawton, the Flyers are going to the conference finals.
That's the pace he's on.
And I don't know if he's going to get there.
Unfortunately, he broke his finger last night. He's out for 4 weeks.
He's out for 4 weeks. So, yeah, well, you know what? Now I'm going to say it. If you, if Scott Lawton gets you 50 points, you're going to the cup. Because if he can do
he's got a month less to do it.
Right. If he can do it without 4 weeks, then, you know.
And right. Also, I'll still take 40. I'll take 40 from a fourth liner who misses 4 weeks.
Right. He's also been playing on the third line a lot because Nolan still isn't healthy.
Right.
We haven't really heard a ton along that way.
Yeah, I'm surprised he's not back yet.
I'm sorry?
I'm surprised he's not back yet. That's somewhat alarming.
I am also surprised he's not back, especially after he traveled to Western Canada with the team.
Correct.
And then that would suggest that he was close. I don't know if he traveled to Chicago. I would guess probably not. But, you know, you've played three of your last four at home. If he was close in Western Canada, why hasn't he played? And as far as I know, he's not even really practicing.
Right, and you haven't even heard anything.
No, and you know, obviously...
That's what's most alarming.
Yeah,
there's been no, of course, know, oh, it's going to be another couple of weeks, or oh, this happened, or oh, we set back, or oh, he's day-to-day, nothing.
And I think a lot of that is the nature of head injuries, and the fact that they don't recover like a knee does, or like an ankle does, or even like an elbow or a hand does, where it feels a little better, and it feels a little better, and it feels a little better, and then you're good to go. Head issues are super, super strange. And I'm no expert, obviously. I'm not a medical professional. But it seems like an issue like this is a problem until it's fixed. And then once it's fixed, you're good. It doesn't heal. It's like a light switch. It's on or it's off.
Yeah, but the fact that they're saying nothing, it really makes you wonder
Because there's no timeline. If it's his knee...
They have no idea, that's a problem.
Well, sure, but you can say...
A concern, not a problem.
If it's his knee, you can say, all right, it looks like he'll be back in 2 weeks, or it looks like he'll be back in a week and a half, or a week, or 3 days, or he's practicing. But with a head injury, if it's just on or off, he might wake up tomorrow, and it's gone. And he wakes up, and boom, his head is fine, and he plays Tuesday night against the Penguins.
Yeah, but the longer this goes, though...
The scarier it is, for sure.
For long-term
Yep, concerns. I agree. He was your number two. Number two overall.
Pronger's not here for a reason. Pronger's not playing anymore.
All right, yep.
Nobody saw that coming.
No.
Yeah, he banged his head a little bit. Guy's tough as nails.
Yep.
Never came back. It's the longer this goes, the more concerning it is in the long term.
Yeah, even, you know, Ian LaPerriere took a shot in the face... Ended up coming back. He played after that, and then the post-concussion syndrome is what got Lappy.
Right.
So, and, you know, kind of a similar thing with Pronger. He came back, played a couple of games, and went, nah, this ain't right. And, you know, went back out, never came back. And I'm hoping...
look, if Pronger was 28 when it happened, it might have been a different reaction for him.
The fact that Nolan Patrick's 21, I want him to take literally as long as he needs.
Yeah, I agree. But the fact that he is 21...
It's concerning.
It's a concern.
I absolutely
how long this
agree
is taking is a concern. And what they called it initially was, you know, he's having concussion syndrome problems.
Right.
Not he suffered a concussion and needs to, you know, get better.
And that's
concussion syndrome.
And that's scary.
It's concerning.
Something's off.
That's the only
off.
Word I can use.
Yeah, something's off. And obviously we wish him the best and we want him to come back and be a productive member of this team. But your son mentioned it to me one day. I don't believe he mentioned it on the air. You think there's any chance the Flyers knew about this in June when they traded for the rights to Kevin Hayes and ended up signing Kevin Hayes? You think there's any chance they knew about this and took safeguard measures to prevent, you know, so they still had a 2C? Because if you don't have Kevin Hayes this year right now with the Patrick medical situation,
you got real problems.
You're in severe trouble.
Yep.
Because now Scott Lawton.
Now you've lost Lawton. Exactly.
Scott Lawton's your second line center. Michael Roffel's your third, and like Tyler Pitlick on the fourth, maybe. Yeah. Like
and you just lost Lawton.
Actually, at that point, honestly, if you don't have Kevin Hayes and Nolan Patrick's hurt, Morgan Frost probably makes the team for better or worse.
Or you've made an early season trade.
Right. Or you've done something
for a stopgap guy, yeah.
And making a move because you need to.
Never a good idea.
It's never a long-term solution. You know, you look back to all the moves the Flyers have made in October, November, because they were desperate and wanted to make a change. How many of them have worked out? Probably not many.
Very few, yeah. It doesn't happen often.
So do you think there's any way the Flyers knew about this in June? Maybe when Nolan left, he was having this sort of issue and they got Kevin Hayes just to kind of safeguard?
Or do you think there's a chance? God, I hope not, because then that's a real problem.
I agree. But
you
at
know,
the same
June,
time,
well, June to October, you know. But you know, one thing that feeds into that being a possibility, you heard nothing. Season starts. He's not playing. He has concussion syndrome.
Yep. Right. When did that happen?
I mean, he played in the preseason though, so that would go against it.
Maybe he was feeling better. I'm not going to speculate. I don't really want to sit here and speculate about what may or may not have happened, but. I could see them, you know, at the end of the season, if he's having this issue kind of down the stretch, I could see the team saying, all right, well, we're almost at the end of the season. let's see how the summer goes. You know, go take some time off, rest, recover, see if this gets better. And then he called him in June and said, well, it's not really getting better. And they said, all right, let's go get Kevin Hayes.
I mean, I'd like to believe it was more of a, you know, how good are we going to be if we have three centers like this?
I agree. Well, and
that's hopefully what it was.
And I know you mentioned Scott Laughton a little bit, but Scott Laughton has looked great this season in his role.
Yeah, I thought he had a real good season last year. Again, if you give me three Scott Laughtons on my fourth line, that team's going to win a lot of hockey games.
Absolutely. And Tyler Pitlick and Michael Roffel probably aren't quite as good as Scott Laughton, but they're perfectly serviceable fourth liners. You know, Chris Stewart will come in occasionally. We talked at the end of, at the beginning of last week's show, Kevin and I, the news broke that Joel Farabee got called up. He played his first game against Vegas, but then he really played his first comfortable game in Chicago. Ended up having an excellent night. The offsides rule got him twice.
Right.
I actually missed that game. I was in North Carolina. I was on vacation this week. I was listening along to it. Why don't you tell me what you saw out of Joel Farabee on Thursday?
I liked what I saw. I hesitate to put any credence into anything in the first game or two of anybody's career, good or bad.
Small sample size, take a shot.
And you're playing. It's not just the size. It's the emotion that you're playing with. It's the fear and the adrenaline, all of the things that factor. Not that you don't ever play hard.
Right.
But
and in the first game, he did look good.
Yeah. But I give more after 25 games to see what he's more capable of when it's an every night, every day.
When he's in the routine, grind. It's no longer special. It's no longer, correct. I'm playing my first game or my second game.
Correct.
I'm now just
how many times you see a pitcher coming out? Look, the Phillies had a pitcher this year, threw a shutout in his first game. His ERA after that was like 8.
Yeah.
I mean, it's easy to
get up for one game. It's hard to get up every night for months and months.
The reason you watch the games and the reason you play the games, because on paper,
win the game.
And on paper, there's no reason to. You know who's going to win. But then we're all human.
Yep.
And the human element comes into it.
And we'll get into that a little bit when we talk about the Columbus game. But back to Chicago. I think he looked great from what I saw.
Liked what I saw, you know. Again, we'll see.
Right,
I don't want to say too much about him yet.
So far, the utilization has been third line ice time, but then he's getting looks with the top power play unit. And I like that a lot because that first power play unit, really, before this season, it's been the same for a very long time. It's been Giroux, Ghost, Voracek, and then a net front guy. It's been JVR. Before that, it was Wayne Simmonds. And then your fifth guy has just kind of been Guy. It's been Sean Couturier in the last couple of years. Michael Roffel got some looks before that.
It's been the next best player, next best offensive option. Right.
And out of the guys that I've mentioned, other than Sean Couturier, Joel Farabee is more skilled than Michael Roffel in that role or whoever's been in that role. So I think Joel Farabee can really succeed with that unit. And a little bit of ice time, I don't think he should necessarily be playing next to Claude on a regular line. But a little bit of ice time with him on the power play where he can really look at him and watch him run the power play. Joel Farabee starting to look like, and I know this is big talk for a couple games in, but I saw it even in the preseason. Joel Farabee is starting to make a case to be the heir apparent to Claude on that power play. In a couple years, I could see Claude going down to an accessory role and Joel Farabee picking up the main puck carrier role on that power play. And again, I know that's supreme praise and it's very early, but so far I've seen a real knowledge and awareness of where the puck is, where the puck's going. His anticipation is excellent and he's smart. Well,
you gotta remember also the other team has no clue about what he's gonna
do. That's fair. There's no tape.
What his abilities are and things like that. So when you see Drew get the puck, there's a panic. When you see him get the puck, there may be a little bit of a relaxation. Okay, what's he going to do with it? It's, again, we're human. There's a human nature element to everything that goes into sport. But what I like most about the power play, to go away from this guy, this player that you want to talk about, they moved Drew to the other side. If you notice now, Drew's come back on occasion to the other side. That to me,
they're willing. They're willing to let them rotate.
Past regimes aside, and we're not going to mention names.
That's
good coaching. That's good coaching. We're going to change what we do, and we're going to put them. And then when you start to adjust to that, now we can go back to what we did here because you're not ready for it,
right? And I think
you didn't talk about it in the locker room. It's not as easy to play when you don't see it every single time you're on the power play.
Right. And
it's another option and another go-to. And their power play has been good.
And we mentioned it early. We saw a lot of Claude on his strong side during the preseason, and a lot of us kind of hated it. And I think that was AV forcing him to play it. And now that he is forced into play it and comfortable with playing on his strong side, now you let him. If the play takes him to his offside, then you let him play over there. You let him get that one-timer. If he can play both sides, it allows him to play either side, if that makes sense.
And it frees up options.
Exactly.
In the middle of a power play, they can change roles on ice as the game's in motion.
Yep. And that'll
also being on the other side, that again, I know he's not a young player anymore, but that doesn't mean you can't learn. Playing on the other side, he now may be picking up on things when he's back on his strong side to say, I know now more about what's going over there because I've been over there for 10 games.
Exactly.
And that helps. So that the guy clearly knows how to coach.
And for what it's worth, I don't know if you're following any sort of NHL stats at the moment, but the Flyers currently have the best two players in the league in terms of power play percentage.
I did not know that. Power play has been good.
Sean Couturier is 69.06% in the dot.
That's a big number.
And Claude Giroux is 67.8 on the dot. Now, they spend a significant amount of time playing together often, and we'll go into some line changes that happen later. But, when they play together, it's a little chintzy because Sean Couturier takes his strong side faceoffs and Claude Giroux takes his strong side faceoffs. So those numbers are a little skewed, but still, Sean Couturier being almost 70% in the dot is absurd.
Yep.
Like, that's not something you see often.
To me, the only critical, they're great numbers.
Yeah.
I think one of the most useless stats in hockey, though, is the faceoff win. It's huge on a power play.
I was going to say, I disagree.
Huge on a power play. Other than power plays, you drop the puck. One team, for the most part, one team's going to win 52%. One team's going to win 48%. That's over a season. The best guys in the NHL are 55%. Yep.
And I believe the Flyers were also first in faceoff percentage last year.
It's one of the most overused, over-important stats. Once the puck is dropped, who wins the faceoff just dictates where the play goes. It doesn't give you a better chance to score or stop the other team from scoring necessarily.
Sure it does, because you now don't.
Not at a high percentage.
You're talking about a
game where 90% of the time you shoot, you don't score.
Right.
Okay. And 50% of the time, almost 50% of the time, you don't win the faceoff. So what's it, 5 goals a season off the faceoff? It's just not that important.
I think that having possession and getting
losing the faceoff 90% of the time would be a problem.
Yeah.
But you're not going to. The worst guys in the league are 45, the best guys are 55. It's just not that important.
But if you're closer to 60 or 65%, that means the other team is only winning 35 to 40%. And that's the thing, is like winning, you can say that winning.
No, that's a big number. No, if you finish the season at 70%.
Well, 70 is ridiculous. But.
Yeah, 70, if you finish the season at 70%, that's going to lead to maybe winning 2 or 3 more games a year. Yeah, but it's just not going
to
happen.
Sure. But you also have to remember that there's, that first face-off in overtime, or there's a face-off with a minute left in the game. Like, there's these critical face-offs.
I never said no face-offs are important.
Right, but the better your percentage is, the more likely you are to win that draw, right? Like, the better you are in the dot, the better, the more Sean Couturiers and Claude Giroux and Kevin Hayes have.
Yeah, the better you are, you have a 5% chance.
Exactly. And if you have if you have the two best guys in the league, you can throw them both out with 30 seconds left. So if the first one misses, or first one gets kicked out, the second one comes in, you win that faceoff. You have you're in scoring position.
Never said it's not a factor. I said it's an overblown factor.
That's fair. So we had the Chicago game, which, again, I missed. The Flyers won that game. Joel Farabee had his first career point and then didn't have his first career point and then had his first career point again. And
that is exactly what happened.
Right. And it's nice to see the kid get one. And it was a secondary assist, whereas, you know, the one that got taken back, I believe, was a primary assist. But either way, you get one. You get off the, you know, get off the schneid. You get the monkey off the back, whatever you want to call it. You break the ice. And, you know,
here's my favorite part of the Chicago game. The Flyers went up 4-1, right?
Yep.
And my favorite part of the Vegas game, the Flyers went up 4-1, 5-1, 6-1. But at some point it was 4-1 or 5-1.
In the Chicago game, 6-1. In the Chicago game, the Flyers were up 2-0, and then Saad scored early in the third, and then the Flyers scored 3 and 4 after that. But
at one point it was 4-1.
Correct.
What was the final score?
4-1.
They were up 6-1. What was the final score?
6-2.
Flyers were up last night 6-4.
They were up 1-0.
What was the final score?
They were up 1-0, and then they were up 6-4, and then they won 7-4.
7-4. Yep. So, all three games, multiple goal leads, and they finished with that multiple goal win or better.
Yes.
They're not sitting back.
I agree.
They're not blowing leads. They've also earlier in the year had one goal leads that they turned into two goal leads, or they won by that one goal.
I agree.
They're so much better
down the stretch.
Playing with the lead in the last three. Last night, the last 3 minutes of the game, they didn't get the puck in the zone.
Right. Okay.
In our zone.
Now let's talk about last night, because the Flyers, about midway, early in the third period, the Flyers were down 4-2, which is outrageous because the Flyers were the better team for that entire game.
Clearly.
Like you mentioned.
Elliott didn't have a great game.
No.
Especially early.
But
which happens.
Right. Like you alluded to earlier, the first period they spent kind of feeling out Columbus and figuring out what the game plan was and blah, blah, blah. And then in the second period, I believe Columbus had 3 shots. Like it was not a particularly good game in terms of generating offense for Columbus. I'm sorry, they had 12 shots in the second period, and that surprises me because I was at that game and I don't remember 12 shots out of Columbus in the second period.
Territorially, the play was all Flyers after the first period.
The Flyers,
and it was 50-50 in the first.
Sure.
The third goal was just a bad goal. There's no other way to say it. Yep. Elliott just can't give up that goal.
No, and the other storyline that we kind of have brewing this week is the fact that Brian Elliott started all three games.
Which I'm going to consider nothing more than they gave him the start in game one. They won it. Hey, let's go back to him. They won it. Hey, we won 2 in a row.
All right, you rode the hot hand. But we've also seen this team.
Nothing more.
We've also seen this team, not just not even just Hakstol, going all the way back to Roger Nielsen and, you know, John Van Beesbroek in the cage, where they find the hot hand and then they run him into the ground. They did a lot with Steve Mason, where Steve Mason would come in, have a good start, and then have another good start, and then have another good start, and then he would start the next seven games and break down.
So I'm going to say, with regard to Mason, I'm just not his biggest fan, so I'm going to jump on it.
That's fair.
I think that's just more to do with him just being a big baby and not being able to ride as the number one. He was always better trying to take the number one role than he was once he had the number one role.
That's fair. You think he got a little soft once he had the job?
Correct.
That's correct.
And had a hard time when there were expectations. He had a hard time
playing up to them,
fulfilling those expectations. Yeah,
I get what you're saying, but either way, like we saw Brian,
soft is probably the better word than baby.
We saw Brian Elliott play three games this week, and you know we talked earlier that we were recording before the Islanders game, but it certainly appears as though Carter Hart will get the start. I believe that's been officially confirmed.
Yeah, if he doesn't start tonight,
That'll be a concern.
Until that happens, there's nothing to talk about.
I believe Sam Carcitti tweeted out that he will be, or at least that is the plan.
I'm assuming that was the plan before last night.
Right. Yes, he tweeted out before last night's game for sure.
Yeah.
But there is a little bit of concern to me that, you know, Carter Hart hasn't started a game in a week and a half. And if the Islanders come out and get a couple of, you know, good shots on net early, and he lets up a bad goal, what does that do to his confidence, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Because he's been sitting around for a week and a half, I would have liked to see him play the Chicago game or Vegas or Columbus. Doesn't have to be both. You know, if you want to give, if Elliot, I don't want to just say this because this is a big deal, but if Elliot is going to take a larger percentage of the starts than we thought he was going to coming into the season, then I don't love it. I'm not going to lie.
I love to see a young player have adversity.
Okay.
Because if that young player is going to be weakened by the adversity, be hurt by the adversity, not react well to the adversity,
it's better to know early on.
He was never going to become the player we thought he could become.
I agree.
I think this kid's makeup is all he sees is the next shot.
Right.
That's it.
Well, I hope that's the case. And, you know.
Dude, he got lit up on his home ice. Where's he from again?
Edmonton. He was in the Edmonton.
Edmonton.
Game.
He got lit up last year in Edmonton.
Yep.
Bounced back strong.
Yep.
And I think the kid just sees the next shot. And look, time's going to tell. He's either going to be our answering goal or he's not. It's not going to be from lack of opportunity. It's going to be from his playing.
For sure.
And how well he plays.
For sure.
And this year doesn't dictate what Carter Hart's going to be for the next 15, hopefully 10 to 15 years.
No, I agree.
This year doesn't say this is what we're going to get forever.
For sure.
He's very, very young.
Yeah. And
he's going to get bigger. He's going to get stronger. He's going to get faster.
And so far he has looked really... You know, pretty solid.
He's looked spectacular at times, and he's looked, you know, like some goalies can.
He's looked like a 20-year-old goalie.
Sometimes you're trying to stop a pee. Sometimes you're trying to stop a beach ball, and that's just the position.
Yeah, and we'll see what he does against the Islanders tonight. And like we mentioned, kind of at the top of the show, there's some big games coming up, and you know, if we need him to come in, or if we need him to play against Pittsburgh, if we need him next weekend, we have another back-to-back, and it's the New Jersey Devils on Friday night, and the Toronto Maple Leafs on Saturday night.
Yeah,
like it's not
a nice four-game stretch, right. or a five-game stretch, including last night. That you're going to see more where you're at.
Yep, and New Jersey hasn't been great. You know, Carter Hart did get his first career shutout against them to start the season in the home opener, but. I mean, division games are always tough. They're going to play you hard. They're going to throw everything they got at you. You know, Wayne Simmonds is going to play Wayne Simmonds hockey. It'll be interesting to see what we got.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll settle for 2-1-1. That'd be a nice stretch.
Yeah, I would take 5 out of 8 points. That's not...
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, that's
2-1-1 on that stretch is again, if you throw last night in there, you'd actually be going 3-1-1 in those five games. I have no problem with that whatsoever.
No, and
given the quality of the opponents that you're going to be playing.
Yep. And if you want to hear our thoughts about these games while they happen, you can do so on Twitter at YWT Podcast. You can also follow Mike at Mike_Giletto if you really want, but I don't know why you would. And really, is there anything else that you wanted to talk about? Because we talked about this past week. We talked about the upcoming week. You know, you mentioned something before we started recording, and did we hit all your topics or?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
Yes, we did. the fact that this team finishes games much stronger than the predecessor team.
Yeah, you had
not
five,
the predecessor
you had,
coach.
You had a five goal.
It's impressive.
You had a five goal third period on Saturday night. It doesn't happen very often. You're down 4-2, and you go go bananas with five goals in the third period, including a shorty, an empty netter. You got the goalie to, you know, try to break his stick. It was a good one.
It wasn't 4-2 going into the third period where you had 20 minutes to do the five.
Right. It was 3-2.
It was 4-2 with like 12 minutes left.
Yep.
Okay. It was impressive. It was very easy to, you know, play hard and see what happens. And if, you know, well, it just didn't happen. We played well tonight. What are you going to do? We'll get them next time.
Right.
It would have been very easy to do that. So the fact that they didn't and they put the pedal to the metal and they were resilient, you know, you don't want to put too much into one game. But, you know, the difference between winning that game and losing that game, being 4-4-1 and patting yourself on the back that you played hard, a lot different than cutting, getting through, being resilient, getting the win, being 5-3-1, and moving forward. I think that's a huge difference and a huge statement game. I really do.
Yeah, Ghost scored the comeback goal, the 4-3 goal.
It was nice to see him show up. I didn't mention him in my stats, but he's on pace for a 10-point season.
Yeah, but
that's frightening.
But again, he played a pretty decent game last night, and that shot was a beauty.
It was a laser beam that ended up in the top corner because it caught off a defenseman's forward skate, which is fun. Like, that's hockey.
That's
but it was a laser beam, which is why it you know, which is why it went where it went.
Right. When you're the better team the whole game, you put yourself in a position to get a bounce like that. For
correct,
sure.
Correct.
And the Flyers were the better team that whole game. And, you know, you scored five goals in the last 9 minutes.
Clearly. And I don't want to bury Ghost because, you know, because he's only had 1 point in 8 games and whatnot. What I think he's going through some is coaching. And what I mean by that is there are correct. And I think there's certain situations that Vigneault, not that he's protecting him, that's not the right word, but there's certainly situations that he doesn't feel Ghost is capable of being what he needs him to be. Okay? So I think he tries to put him out there much more when they have a center ice or an offensive zone faceoff more so than a defensive zone
faceoff. He's
trying
to put him in positions to succeed.
Correct. So the fact that I think he's had less ice time.
Which, you know what? If he's struggling, that's kind of what you want to do. You want to gift wrap him some nice chances, offensive zone, face-off, power plays, et cetera, and maybe that goal last night, you know, gives him a little confidence. And tonight he plays a little better and a little better and a little better, and then all of a sudden he looks like rookie year Ghost. You know, who's legitimately getting some Norris.
Right. The one thing I have noticed with Ghost, and hopefully this is something that's going to be a work in progress, because it's not something that you can do in a summer or in a month or two.
Right.
He looks actually a little thicker.
A little bit.
So hopefully what's going on is he's himself, and part of this is being coaching, that look, if you're not going to be able to be on the wall and get a puck out of the corner in the defensive zone, and you can't do that for me, I can't play you in that situation.
Right.
And you don't like that as a player, and you're going to take it upon yourself to put 20 pounds of muscle on. Again, that's not going to happen in the summer.
Correct.
But over a two or three season run, you put 20 pounds of muscle on to make yourself a better player in that role. Well, that's a credit to the player, and hopefully that's what's starting to happen.
Right. And Ghost, I don't know if you're aware of this, but his girlfriend actually works for a hospital in the city, so even over the summer he lives in the city. So
okay, no, I didn't know that.
Yeah, she finished up nursing school, and she's a nurse at a hospital in the city. I don't know exactly where, but so they live here full time.
They have weight rooms everywhere.
Exactly. Well, yeah, but over the summer, he's got access to the team facility, and he's got access to their nutritionists and their doctors and their blah, blah, blah. So he, more than really any other player who kind of goes home for a month or two over the summer and then wanders in for training camp, Ghost is here. Ghost can, focus on that sort of thing with him because they can really give him some individual attention over the summer.
And well, hopefully that's what's happening, because for him to be a productive defenseman, you're a defenseman. It's in the title. You have to be able to play defense with some regularity.
It's funny because last night I was at the game, and I was also reading the Reddit thread of, you know, people live commenting on the game, and there was a lot of criticism towards Ghost, that he had a bad game, that he wasn't really doing much. And I was thinking, would Ghost as a forward be such a bad idea?
I don't. You
think he could play a wing? Because
I think you're going to have some of the same problems.
Yeah, but for the first,
the winger game is on the wall,
right?
And that's not going to change.
Yeah, but you have a little bit more freedom when you're up there in the rush. But
absolutely, and if you get beat in the offensive zone, it's not in your net.
You have defensemen behind
you. You just
didn't
score. Right.
But I'm just curious, because for the first time, there is a little bit of depth on defense. You still have Sam Moran sitting in the press box. You still have Phil Myers in Lehigh Valley.
Well, forget Sam Moran forever.
Fine. Listen, I understand that.
And as far as Ghost in defense, I'm not ready to say he's done. And I don't necessarily agree with the tweet last night or the in-game review.
Right.
I didn't think he was bad last night at all.
Okay, there was some criticism of his play, and I think
it was unfair.
From people who were just watching the game, I don't know what their expert
Do you remember
is.
A play that ended up in the Flyers net where he made some mistake? If he did, I missed it.
Not really, but it was such a wild roller coaster of a game that it was kind of tough to... I forgot that Jake's first goal went in. By the time they scored six more, it was a little bit of a blur in terms of actually being in the building. But regardless,
what have you seen less from Jake this year?
fewer turnovers, if that's what you're leading to.
Much less. And don't kid yourself. It's a reason why he's only got you 4 points in 8 games. No. I love Jake. I hate the plays that he makes.
Jake frustrates you.
And prior regime frustrated me more in not stopping him. Giroux doesn't turn the puck over as much anymore either, and his points are down. That neither one of those are a coincidence. So now they have to learn, okay, still get my points, but not turn the puck over.
Would you say that Jake is kind of like your son? You love him and you want him to do well, but every once in a while you just want to smack him upside the head.
That's probably fair. Though he's giving me a grandbaby, so I don't want to smack him as much as I used to.
No, you can still smack him. That's fine.
I think Jake's playing well. I really do. Again, the production has to increase, but I'm willing to give up the immediate production for him learning to play the way the coach wants him to play. And if he has an 80-point season instead of a 95-point season,
but he gives away
30 goals less because of it, that's a positive. 15 goals.
Yep. Well, and we will see if Jake Voracek can continue that. But in the meantime, we're going to wrap up this show. You can find the show on Twitter at YWT Podcast. You can find Mike at Mike_Giletto. You can also find the show on Facebook, Instagram, Podbean, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify. We are on Spotify. I forgot to mention that one before. And sportstalkphilly.com. So in the meantime, I believe that's it. We got 4 games this week. It's a big one. We'll record after probably next Sunday morning again. Toronto, Saturday night. That'll be a good one. And until
Looking
then.
Looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Me as well. And until then, we'll see you later.